Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This is where Chicago goes to talk Bears. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. A radio.com sports station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the numeral for kids.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What's unfortunate here is that what I hate talking about all this time is that our defense played lights out today. You know, and that's where, like, I don't know. I understand we want to look at all the negatives and stuff. But really, guys, I mean, what's pretty cool is that our defense played lights out today. They played awesome against a good offense. And so I just want to be careful of getting too much of that, because I'm pretty excited right now. We're 5-1.
See, now he's excited. Okay, well, that's great. That's Matt Nagy. And by the way, thanks to everybody who's weighing in on the Doc Emmerich interview and saying things. And everything that you're saying about him and about how he sounds so genuine and real, it's absolutely all true. And yeah, he's a terrific dude, just a very, very, very real guy. And I do suggest you pick up the book for your fan or give it as a gift this holiday season, the off mic. Had we more time, I wanted to ask him about his what he says in the book about how much he loves hockey fighting. It's great. He unapologetically says, basically gives you all the caveats of inoculating against, yes, I understand that it's bad and it probably shouldn't be and it's dangerous and we know about chronic traumatic encephalopathy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he unabashedly loves and loved hockey fighting, and the more mayhem the better. He describes that, I mean, the fights that spilled into hallways and went into locker rooms, the guys climbing over the glass and like Slapshot type stuff, even though Slapshot, the entire theme of Slapshot was against the toxic masculinity of some of that, and a lot of people fail to understand that still. But it's part of the reason why he fell in love with the game was the absolute chaos and mayhem of hockey fighting. And it kind of reminded me about how I feel about the NFL, how I feel about the cognitive dissonance and the intellectual torture you go through to try to make it okay to see people smash into each other. But that, you know, gets back to my love of Kyle Fuller and everything else, and how they're Matt Nagy and so many people are talking about how they handle it. I wanted to get into some of that stuff because Nagy's just so fascinating to me, how he can be different people. He can be angry, dissatisfied, disappointed offensive coordinator Matt Nagy, and then they win the game, and even though their offense sucked eggs, he can still say, yeah, man, come on, get on board, we're excited.
I'm pretty excited right now. We're 5-1.
Yeah, awesome. You know, the psychology of that is really, and maybe he's got me a little bit because the other teams are bad. Seeing the Packers and seeing the NFC East and seeing who the Rams are beating to roll out to their record, and the fact the Saints can't really cover anybody either, I don't know. Maybe it's just with everything else horrible that's going on and all the tensions, and we wake up and we look at our phones and all, you get the stomach acid and you get all of the existential angst that's just baked into everything now. Maybe the best thing we can do is just say, all right, 5-1, the offense kind of sucks. Who cares? Go get them.
And this was how.
Well, this is how Matt Nagy started his press conference yesterday with reporters.
The exciting part is being 5-1. I think we're all pretty excited about that. It's a pretty good feeling.
when you go back and watch the tape, you realize, you know, offensively, start there, scored on three of the four possessions in the first half, had that touchdown there in the red zone, and then had an 11-play drive that ended in a field goal, and then a 9-play drive there right before the end of the half. We got that 55-yard field goal by Cairo. Again, I thought the third and goal touchdown was good, the end of minute two half, and then that 11-play drive. We had that issue with the timeout and the delay game, and then we had the second and six. We got down there where we ended up kicking that field goal. We had a second and six, called a run, lost 3 yards, got to third and nine. So that's we would have liked to – I think that was a play that jumped out to me that wish would have been a little bit better there. And then in the second half, we had two 10-play drives. We had a scoring drives, took up 4 minutes, both of them, for a touchdown and a field goal. That was the good part. As far as the part where we can be better is a third and three that we didn't convert, and then the third and two at the end of the game to close the game out. Defensively, you could really feel everybody flying around. I mean, it was everybody. Would have loved to be able to get that touchdown for 39. I mean, for Eddie to have two touchdowns this year, he's an opportunistic player. It's been unfortunate, but he's not going to stop. Shoot, I mean, you're talking about some plays now that this is like getting touchdowns like that. That's pretty big as a team, and then selfishly for him too. So I know he's bummed out about it, but he's going to keep playing hard, and we appreciate that. But the defense, you know, to start the game, 3-play drive for Carolina ends in an interception. And then they had a 14-play drive where we're really doing well in the red zone defense and held them to a field goal. And then they had the 13-play drive that ended in a field goal. We had that fourth and three where we got the defensive offside, so we got to clean that up. And then the second half, again, we got the fumble by 39, punched it out. It was awesome. They missed a field goal. We held them on downs. And then that last drive of the series there with DHC getting an interception. So I just think that overall, that for both those phases, there's that. Special teams, first play of the drive, very first kickoff of the game, set the tone, backed them up. And then we had Cairo doing well. We had that punt by Pat O'Donnell inside the five, landed at the two. It was a sweet punt. So I thought overall, really, that phase played well too. So that's where we're at, 5-1, and getting ready here for L.A.
That's happy Matt Nagy. That's head coach Matt Nagy doing head coach things, which is different than after he watches offensive film and thinks, what are we doing out there? This has got to be better, and this guy's in the wrong place, and that guy's in the wrong place. We can see all of it. And I guess I'm vacillating right with him as far as optimism for the Bears and what to feel about it. It's certainly easier to just kind of roll with it and let them do what they're doing and be what they're being, and maybe Monday night is going to be the way to see either puncture the balloon or supercharge some of these feelings. But man, free Kyle Fuller. This guy's just making plays all over the field, just it playing at an absolute top NFL level right now. The most physical Bears corner I can ever remember seeing with some of the plays he's making. I said that yesterday. We've seen safeties do what he does and crack guys like that and de-cleat guys like that, but that's a corner. It's a corner playing that way with that kind of intimidating physicality. And yet the refs are just flagging him for being awesome. Like, oh,
the referees are garbage.
Thank you, Tom Thayer. The referees are garbage. It's garbage. And they just throw the flag because, like, oh, that's got to be a flag because that was just too sweet. That was just, ooh, rattles your bones so much the flag comes out of your pocket. Well, this is Nagy talking about the way Kyle Fuller's playing and how he's dealing with these penalties on textbook hits.
Yeah, you're right, Dan. I mean, it's that. First of all, that open field tackle, that's not easy. He did a good job of getting him down. It's a little zone read that they have there. He pulled in one-on-one, and he made the play. So that was a big play. And then we were kind of joking about it on the plane. Kyle sits right behind me. And, I mean, we were all on there. I mean, there is literally nothing you can do in his position. He's just playing football. You know, it's unfortunate. It's a bang-bang play. And, again, the referees have a tough job there when it is that fast. So just one of those games yesterday, it felt like where we had a few things that went against us. Not intentionally or anything like that, but it was what it was. But that's another part, too, I think, to everybody here, as you kind of, you know, that's another part of the game that I'm proud of our guys to be able to work through, you know, that kind of stuff. We're fighting through that kind of adversity and still winning. So that's the excitement that we have.
Okay. So that the excitement is it's kind of weird logically, but I guess he's saying sort of what Nick Foles is saying, that they're optimistic because they're not good. when you really boil it down, that's kind of what Nick Foles said. And I listened to it again yesterday because I don't quite get it. That it's one thing to be really good. It's another thing to know you haven't been good yet. And that's why they're excited, because they think there's so much more. Well, there better be, because it hasn't been good. Like, you're kind of trying to have it both ways there. Like, yeah, we could be pretty and all that, but you don't want to be that. You'd rather be ugly.
We can fix what we're doing. It doesn't happen overnight. Offenses don't get fixed overnight. And sometimes they don't get fixed throughout the course of years. You've seen it in the NFL. There's been teams that have been bad offensively for a very long time. We're not one of those teams. We're a team that's young offensively. We're growing. We're getting to know each other. We're figuring out who we are, and we're doing it at the right time. And as a team, we're winning these games. And I think that's what's important. Now, we're not going to get complacent and say, hey, man, we're 5-1. This is it. No, like, we're sitting there in the locker room after the game talking through it. Hey, we got to be better here. This is what we got to do here. Communication here, route running here. Hey, we got to be able to run the ball here. We know that. I know you're all going to ask those questions. We know that.
Go Bears. Yeah, okay. When he says doing it at the right time, no, the right time is do it in training camp and then come out really good at offense. That's what I don't really understand, this idea of, you know, you benched a quarterback already. So when you say doing it at the right time ideally is before the game start, and then the offense is good, and then you go score 30 points a game. Okay. And he said, you're not one of those, you see, teams have been bad on offense for a long time. We're not one of those teams. Yeah, you are, kind of. The we here is Bears. We've been here. We've been watching this. Either way, I guess I love the energy. You know, don't stop him. He's on a roll. That said, you show me a bad offensive line, I will always show you a bad offensive coordinator. That is an absolute football truism. A bad offensive line means the coordinator is going to look bad, because if you can't block anything, there isn't much you can do. So Nagy knows that the fat guys up front have issues, and here's how he's going to deal with them.
We know that across the board on offense right now, there's different things that we can get better at. And that's everybody, you know, myself included. And so we keep talking about, hey, I think I saw it yesterday. I saw what Nick said about, would you rather win ugly or lose pretty, you know? And I think that kind of sums it up there. But the best part of what he said, right, is that we all care, and we all got to do whatever we can to get this thing fixed. We're 5-1 right now, and we're not playing well offensively. So when we do get this thing up and running, which we will, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. And so that's the goal. We know, we understand where our warts are on offense, and we get that, and we're going to keep working on it. But we're going to continue to stay positive as we do this, because of where we know we're at and where we're going.
Okay. I guess I'll stay as positive as I can, in large part because I don't think the best of the NFL or is all that elite right now. That maybe the difference between this Bears 5-1 and somebody else still ranked ahead of them in some subjective power rankings, it's just a tough case to make if everything he's saying is true, and all of a sudden the offensive line and everybody's just going to get better. Then the run game has to improve too. What is he seeing from David Montgomery?
David's doing a really good job. I mean, he runs hard now. I mean, you see some of those runs in there where he's breaking some tackles and getting extra yards and yards after contact. That's what he's always done. I love that about him. And then, yeah, in regards to just this, the schematics, the execution, yeah, we got to make sure that we do our job and handle all that stuff. And like I said, again, I'm going to go back to it. Being 5-1, it's a lot easier to try to fix. And we look at the scheme, we look at the players, we look at everything, we look at how we're practicing, we look at what we're teaching, all that stuff.
Good. I would say look at all that and make it better. And I was thinking about it yesterday when I saw area kid Nicky Allegretti out of Illinois having a terrific game as the Chiefs' left guard, forced into action there because of opt-outs and injuries, and playing like his hair was on fire. And I'm just thinking, you know, there's a similar offense in the NFC that could really use a competent, strong left guard right now.
Interesting. We understand where our warts are on offense.
Okay. That's part of it. And then have them excised or burned off, or what do they, freeze them off now, or use duct tape or whatever, however they have them removed at the moment. We're going to talk baseball because the World Series begins tonight. Craig Calcaterra, who writes the Cup of Coffee newsletter and joins us weekly talking baseball, is going to be our guest. He is coming up on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. Craig Calcaterra, writer and editor of the daily baseball newsletter, Cup of Coffee.
You gotta try this coffee. It's the best coffee I've ever had in my life.
This is better than Mocha Joe's.
Bringing you up to speed on what's happening in Major League Baseball.
It has been posited that Javier Baez is missing something in his game when he doesn't have people there to entertain.
I'm not yet ready to get on board of some train that says, oh, it's because he's losing energy from the fans. This is not professional wrestling. It's not Hulkamania where all of a sudden his finger is going to go up and he's going to start pointing and hulking out on everybody. I just think it's baseball. It's complicated.
Craig Calcaterra with Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score.
Last hope for the Astros. And on the first pitch in the air, right field. That is playable. Coming in, Margot, and that's it. The Tampa Bay Rays have won the American League pennant. Towering fly ball. The Dodgers come from behind in the series. They come from behind in Game 7, and they win the National League pennant.
Highlights courtesy TBS and Fox. This segment is brought to you by Toro Snowblowers. For grisly winters, you need a Toro Power Max snowblower. It's a beast on snow. Act now. Get up to $100 off on select Toro Power Max snowblowers. See your Toro retailer now. Win winter with a Toro. Craig Calcaterra, national baseball writer, the Cup of Coffee newsletter, cupofcoffee.substack.com. He's on Twitter. Craig Calcaterra is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. We have reached the World Series, Craig, and in this 60-game season, this memorable and improbable season, it's no small achievement.
No, I'm just happy we got here. I mean, I didn't think we would. If you had asked me to bet on it back in July, I would have thought that it might not happen. I actually argued that it shouldn't have happened, but hey, what do I know? So now let's talk about what I think about the World Series, right?
Right, and whether or not you have any kind of rooting interest in this, I guess I've talked myself into a place where I don't like it when great players are dogged by an inability to replicate their talent and success in the playoffs. I guess I'm rooting for Clayton Kershaw.
That's a good thing to root for. I agree with you on that. I don't like that whole, oh, he can't do it in the playoffs. I mean, if you look at Clayton Kershaw's playoff failures in the past, he's not even the author of half of them, right? A lot of them are a function of Dave Roberts or Don Mattingly leaving him in games too long, his bullpen not picking him up. Baseball's a team game, even for pitchers, and I think that his greatness should not be sullied by a failure in the postseason. So, hey, I'd like to see the postseason have some success for him, have him get a ring so we don't even have to talk about that kind of nonsense. As far as a rooting interest beyond that, I'm one of the few baseball writers out there who doesn't hesitate to say he roots for teams. I'm a Braves fan. I was rooting for the Braves to beat the Dodgers, but my secondary rooting interest for a very long time has been the Dodgers. My wife's from L.A. I've got a lot of friends in L.A. I like blue, so I wear a Dodgers hat a lot. It's just one of those things. Plus, in this series, I have a specific anti-rooting interest. I have to root against Kevin Kiermaier, the center fielder for the Rays, because 5 years ago on Twitter, he made fun of a picture of me with my cats and then blocked me. And if that's not a reason to root against somebody, I have no idea what is. Me and my cats are rooting against Kevin Kiermaier. Sorry, the rest of the Rays. You fall with them.
And meanwhile, Kevin Cash is going to be under a microscope that he hasn't had to deal with before. And one thing you love about him, he manages hard. And that's because he kind of has to. He's got a fraction of the payroll. He can't just write out the lineup card and say, you guys go do it. If ever there were a time when you get to watch someone manage, this is a case for it at the highest level.
Yeah, normally we use that as some way to bash a manager. Oh, we didn't come to see you, pull the strings and read the notebook and all that. But Kevin Cash is an amazingly good manager. I mean, he's probably one of the best sort of tactical managers in all of baseball, I think, for the reason you state. He's had to be, but he's really, really good at it. There are a lot of managers that have had to do those things and have failed miserably. Cash knows what strings to pull. He doesn't leave pitchers in too long. He knows who to go with. His gut instincts seem to work very well for him. I know there's a lot of help there. He's got a front office. It's not like he's doing it by himself, and they work very collaboratively with the Rays. But Cash is a fantastic manager, and you know, I can't say that, oh, I'm rooting for him to manage really well. No one cheers for a manager, but he is a great one. And given the limitations the Rays have, he is entitled to so much credit for where they've gotten.
Something I'm trying to figure out that doesn't make sense to me, and I actually reached out for some advice on this. Cody Bellinger hits the home run. And then in the celebration afterward, there is sort of an awkward high five. And he said his shoulder dislocated. It actually popped out of the socket. It was placed back in. And then he said, everything's fine. And I know we think about, like, you know, Mel Gibson's character, Martin Riggs in Lethal Weapon or something like that.
I was about to go with that.
Oh, sorry. But I asked an orthopedist who said there's no way a shoulder can come out like that without there being some damage to the labrum. And thinking that either that was a pre-existing condition, either there was some laxity in there that he's just been dealing with. Like, for them to so blithely say everything's okay means there might have been something, something that he'd been dealing with before, but that's not a trivial thing. Say, like, no big deal, his shoulder popped out, he's fine.
Right, I know. You're never going to get truth from a player or even a team about their health at this stage, right? You'll hear later if Bellinger goes, like, you know, 0-19 in the series and the Rays win, you'll hear stories, oh, well, you know, Bellinger wasn't right. You know, he dislocated a shoulder. That's major, you know. Now they're downplaying it. I also think, you know, everybody had that weird friend in middle school who could do weird things with their body, right? Like, oh, look, he's flipping his eyelids. Oh, look, he's dislocating his shoulder. You know, and then they went on to become people who escaped from straitjackets on, you know, sideshows somewhere. I feel like
they go on to be Jeffrey Toobin eventually.
Hey, I'm on a Zoom right now with you guys. Look at me behaving myself. Anyway, I think we might have a definitional problem of what popping a shoulder is. There's dislocation, then there's just that guy who's got double joints and makes a little popping sound. I have no idea, but I think that he's going to be fine. If he's being as blasé about it, he probably is. But, yeah, wait for the excuses after the series if he doesn't come through.
If you want to get a look at Craig Calcaterra, you can. He is not rocking a baseball hat as he usually does today. You can see him on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. I'm interested to see how these managers work the high leverage situations and what we understand in World Series games now about how sometimes it's the bottom of the fourth when that game is going to get decided, and the inflection points that we see along our graph of win expectancy aren't in our control. We would love for all of them to be in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. But do you think we have a best practices now among these the teams that understand that what was once considered conventional is just now not, and you can only manage the game and the situations as they sequence in front of you?
Oh, I think every team understands it, and I think even baseball media and most baseball fans are beginning to understand it very well. Look no further than in the ALCS, that game when Dusty Baker left Zach Greinke in. After he visited him on the mound, left him in a little bit. He was in the third time through the lineup. He actually got out of it. It was successful for him. It was headline news for like 2 days that Dusty Baker left Zach Greinke in to do what, until a couple of years ago, every starting pitcher, especially in the postseason, especially one like Zach Greinke, would be allowed to do and finish off batters, even though he's technically past his point of usually being pulled. I think everybody gets that now. I think, again, the biggest criticism when Kershaw fell on his face in the NLCS against the Braves was Dave Roberts left him in too long. Top of the lineup to begin an inning, third time through the lineup. You don't do that, especially with some dangerous lefties coming up batters who hit lefties well. So I think everybody's kind of internalized that. I think that Dave Roberts has learned that lesson a lot. And I also think that the fact that we've got off days in the World Series, where we didn't have off days during the League Championship Series, the Division Series, is going to help him pull that trigger a little further. He knows that he could do that. He can rely on his pen, knowing that at two occasions at the most, he's going to have some rest time for his relievers.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about, actually, because as I'm looking at the schedule here in my Tribune Sports section, Tuesday, Wednesday, one off day, then Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So this is still dense, and it's going to mean that the way they would look at usages is going to change. What's the secret sauce here? How do you think there is an inequity? How can somebody game this better than the opponent?
I don't know if there's a secret sauce. If you ask a manager about it, they always say it's the hot hand or whatever. But I think this certainly benefits the Dodgers, right? Because they don't have the arms that the Rays have. If you're going 7 days in a row, possibly, like we did in the LCS, the Rays are just going to attrition you with bullpen. They've got all those guys that throw 98 miles per hour. The Dodgers have had shaky experiences with Pedro Baez, then he came back okay. Shaky experiences with Kenley Jansen, then he came back okay. Gratterall, he looks good, then he doesn't look good. I think that extra day or extra 2 days is going to help. I know it's, five games in 6 days, but that's no different than the regular season, really. You see that all the time in the regular season. So I think this helps the Dodgers. I don't know what secret sauce a manager uses for that, but the fact that this is the end of the season, this is it, means that they can go all out with these guys, and a lot of the normal bullpen thinking is not going to be as prevalent here. Just go out, throw hard, do the best you can, because then you've got 4 months to rest.
Is there a comp for Randy Arozarena for being somebody with that young, that inexperienced, and then doing what he's doing this consistently on this stage?
He's the closest comps I can come up with are those flash in the pan guys, like who was that Yankees guy, Kevin Moss or somebody who came up that time. They have a late season call up, they rack forever, and then you spend 4 or 5 years wondering what happened. I mean, we even saw that a little bit with the former Dodger Yasiel Puig, right? He never was what he was when he first broke on the scene. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Arozarena. It's just, the guy was on the taxi squad until August. And him coming up like this is pretty incredible. I think every World Series, not every World Series, but there are a lot of World Series that, that had guys like that who became these sort of, temporary heroes, but, he's legit. I mean, it's not like he's just lucking into hits and doing really well, and he's going to be a feel good story that goes away. Look at the ball off the bat, metrics that we're seeing from him. He's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting barrels. The guy is seeing very, very well. I think there's every reason to believe that this is going to be not quite what he is going forward, because no one is this good, but that he's going to be a really solid player, and we're going to find out the Cardinals just didn't give him a chance where the Rays have.
Do you think it's fair to read into the larger story of the payroll disparity and what effect that may have on collective bargaining negotiations? Does this really prove anything, or is it just a facile storyline that we can kind of glom onto in a season where we've already agreed that so little may really matter?
I think right now it's an irrelevant story, just for purposes of the World Series. There is nothing that the payroll is going to do at this moment in this next 8 to 9 days that are going to help the Dodgers be better than the Rays. Where they are right now is the Dodgers were 3 games better than the Rays in the regular season. They are clearly the 2 best teams in baseball right now. And all the payroll and all the revenue stuff, that's chatter. That's to talk about in the offseason. That's about team building. That is not about what happens in the World Series. We're going to use that now as a narrative, David versus Goliath, all that. But these are two Goliaths as far as baseball players go. Let's save that for next year. We're going to have plenty of that with the CBA. Right now, let's just talk about head-to-head baseball.
Craig Calcaterra, thank you as always. Appreciate it. Good health.
Thank you very much, Dan.
That is Craig Calcaterra. You should subscribe to the Cup of Coffee newsletter to get it right in your inbox every morning. It's baseball, and it's more than baseball, so you get a little bit extra with your subscription at Substack. The Midday Midway comes up next, and we have to talk about candy and improbability. Candy's always top of mind as we approach Halloween, but there is a sports writer and broadcaster that claims to have been unaware of a candy in a way that I think strains credulity. And it had me thinking about when this candy debuted and what it meant to me. And if we have time, we need to get to the bizarre story of an actual human giant. It's the Midday Midway. It's next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting.
exciting thing on the midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the midday midway with Dan Bernstein on the Score.
On the first half of our show, we talked some Bears out of the gate, just sort of breaking down the Matt Nagy flipping of the switch from offensive frustration as coordinator to, hey, I'm excited and this is awesome and we're 5-1. And I think looking around at the league, if we really look big picture at what's happening out there, maybe you can dare to dream a little bit, because it's really hard to find a perfect team. It's hard to find a team without flaws right now. So maybe the Bears are more in this than we give them credit for, and I'm trying to allow myself some room for that optimism. I do think it means these games against the Packers coming up, and this game Monday night against the Rams, these are big. They're big to tell us how good the Bears are, and they're big in that you can kind of salt away a pretty solid playoff position. Had a wonderful conversation with Mike Doc Emmerich, the legendary broadcaster who is retiring and has a book that's coming out today. We heard from Matt Nagy, and we talked to Craig Calcaterra. All right, this is from Sports Illustrated, and I have to figure this out right now. Bob Ryan, longtime Boston Globe writer and a regular on Sports Reporters and Pardon the Interruption, on Saturday sent out a tweet with 5 words. What the hell is Twix? This is 3:29 p.m. on Saturday. What the hell is Twix? He's 74 years old. He's apparently never had a Twix and didn't know what one was. The backlash came, and then he tweeted about an hour later, sorry, folks, never in my life heard of Twix. And many of you probably never heard of the Clark Bar. Anyway, everyone knows that we're constitutionally restricted to one candy would have to be Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. All right, so he's trying to change the conversation here, and we know everybody loves Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. And I have heard of a Clark Bar, and a Clark Bar is fine. But how can you have not heard of Twix?
They're one of the most advertised candy bars. Like, when you think of candy bar commercials aside from M&M's, Twix is the probably the second most advertised. I see ads for Twix all the time, like during sporting events.
I know. Twix made its debut in this country in 1979. So I was 10 years old. And I remember when it arrived thinking, where the hell has this been? How did Europe have this for 8 years or maybe 67 or 12 years before we had it in the U.S. And it was an awakening when Twix arrived. And you're right, it's everywhere. And it's unbelievable, too. That's the thing. I can understand if you hadn't heard of a candy that sucks, like you hadn't heard of Bitto Honey or something. But it's like not only not hearing of it for somebody who apparently watches as much sports as he does, how many baseball games have you been to where a vendor has got the ice cream with the Twix in it?
It's anytime you go to a grocery store, you're checking out Twix is right there front and center. It's brightly packaged. It's gold and red. It's impossible to miss. I don't know. It's weird. It feels like a weird attention-grabbing sort of a thing. Like, everyone tell me I'm stupid so I can appear on Twitter again. I don't know. It was strange.
I don't know. In my history, back when the kids were younger and would trick-or-treat, in candy metrics of the most stolen from their Halloween haul, where like, I don't know what happened to it. I don't know. That's it. That was number one. Absolute number one, to the point where as they got a little bit older, they would set aside one on purpose and give me like a loss leader and say, look, Daddy, just take it. Don't steal it and lie about it.
The 538 did a power ranking of candy bars yesterday, of the Halloween candies. And Rick and I did it on Monday's I'm Fat podcast, but it's hard to do these things with Rick since he doesn't like peanut or peanut butter.
I know.
And it's just, he just doesn't like it. So it's not like
it's not my fault you guys are wrong.
He's right there. He's not even working today. He just knew. He knew I was going to bust off him at some point.
He's not even at the station. He's just, the power of his anger is able to beam right into our broadcast.
Well, on the 538 list, Twix is number 3. In their power rankings, behind Reese's Peanut Butter Cups and Reese's Miniatures.
And I don't know how kids feel now, either this gender, because to be in a generation when candies would debut like that, 78 was the Reggie Bar. The Reggie Bar was spectacular. And look, the opening day of 78, because Reggie made some joke about, like, I'm in this town and I go to New York, they'll name a candy bar after me. And they did. And it was great. And it was a caramel center covered in a blob of peanuts and chocolate. And they didn't overthink it. And it was just, you know, a little bit of salt in there. But to be, and then they came out with Whatchamacallit, which was okay. And then, you know, here and there, they came out with the Score Bar. Score, S-K-O-R, that was sort of a high-end version of a Heath Bar toffee. But you know, that feeling of taking that walk with your friends to the convenience store and saying, like, let's get a bunch of baseball cards and Bubs Daddy bubblegum and Twix. Oh,
I'm trying to think of what in my lifetime was revealed as a new candy bar. All I can think of is
Take Five
variations of things. Like there's the peanut butter M&Ms and things like that. But I think Reese's Pieces, did those correspond with E.T.? Did they come out with the movie?
Yes, because M&Ms turned them down.
The
idea of Reese's Pieces was because they needed something to substitute for M&M's. So it's almost like the movie helped invent the candy.
Yeah.
Garbage candy and job, a garbage E.T. movie.
It's not a garbage movie. Come on.
It's the bad take hour with Kathy.
Right. The Rick Camp just sort of flits in with bad takes.
E.T. It's traumatizing, but it's not bad. That's where you get. She called him penis breath. That's one of the great movie insults of all time.
Terry wrote the script.
Okay, this is one I'm just going to present this as is. I'm just going to give this to you and do with it as you see fit. It's from the Irish Sun. An 18th century Irish giant whose skeleton was put on display against his will could soon be given the sea burial he always wanted. Charles Byrne suffered from acromegalic gigantism, which caused him to grow to 8 feet 4 inches tall. Against his wishes, his skeleton was put on display for more than 200 years at London's Royal College of Surgeons. But a campaign to give him the final resting place he requested is now gathering momentum. The Dairyman, who was born in Littlebridge in 1761, underwent a rapid growth spurt in his teens, with local legend claiming that his immense height was due to the fact that he was conceived on the top of a tall haystack. Determined to make his fortune, he moved to the UK and worked his way from Scotland to London as a traveling curiosity. The public immediately warmed to him, and he became a household name, with newspapers describing him as the finest display of human nature. He even inspired a London pantomime show called Giant's Causeway. However, he was struck a cruel blow when thieves targeted him in a pub and stole his entire fortune. Already a heavy drinker, he fell into a deep depression and began boozing constantly, causing his health to deteriorate. He then contracted tuberculosis and died in 1783 at the age of 22. A newspaper article from the time noted that, quote, a whole tribe of surgeons put in a claim for the poor departed Irishman surrounding his house just as harpooners would an enormous whale, unquote. The reaction to his death was exactly as Byrne had always feared. Because of his immense height, Byrne knew that his remains would be much sought after in the medical community, so he worried that gravediggers would ransack his coffin and sell it on to the highest bidder. He even refused a cash offer from the famous Scottish surgeon and anatomist John Hunter, who was known for his collection of unusual specimens. Desperate to avoid being used for display after his death, Byrne asked his friends to ensure that he was buried at sea in a lead coffin. His friends honored his wishes, and his body was transported to the coast at Margate. However, en route, a corrupt undertaker hired by Hunter swapped his remains for dead weight. The funeral went ahead as scheduled, with attendees unaware that Burns' remains were no longer in the coffin. Hunter didn't unveil the skeleton until 4 years later, and it was then passed into the hands of the College of Surgeons in 1799. It remained on display there at the Hunterian Museum for the next 200 years, where it's been viewed by countless dignitaries, including Queen Elizabeth. Over the years, The museum has rejected calls for the skeleton to be removed from display, arguing that it has important educational and research value and can assist in the study of acromegalic gigantism. Yet, there have been growing calls for Burns' remains to be treated in accordance with his final wishes, with a Free Charles Burns campaign exerting further pressure on the museum. The facility closed for renovations in 2018. The skeleton has been in storage since. It is not due to reopen until 2022. And the Royal College of Surgeons has said it will review the matter in the meantime. Author Hilary Mantel has backed the campaign for a sea burial for Byrne, insisting it is time Charles Byrne went home. Mantel, who wrote the book The Giant, a novel loosely based on his life, believes it is still not too late to right the wrongs. She said, "I know in real life he was a suffering soul, nothing like the fabulous storybook giant I created. His gratifications were fewer and his end very grim. Science has learned all it can from the bones. The honorable thing would be to lay him to rest. It would suit the spirit of the times, and I don't see a reason for delay. He's waited long enough." That was a Midday Midway story presented without comment, because it needeth none. We need some comment on the Bears' offensive production or lack thereof, and what the quarterbacks are doing and how they're trying to do it and how it may be improved. Sage Rosenfels breaks it all down for us every Tuesday at 11, and we are right upon that. Now, he's next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.